Hey, if you're a journalist who uses the tool Help a Reporter Out, or Harrow, listen up. Harrow is moving to Cision's new app, Connectively. But what is Connectively? Well, imagine a place where you can quickly connect with expert sources for your next story. Connectively is a new app from Cision that's changing the way journalists like us, content creators, experts, and PRs work together. So if you're in search of credible sources, Connectively is your next stop. With just a click, you can publish your queries. These go straight to a feed where experts from loads of different backgrounds can respond, giving you their expertise. So go on, visit connectively.us to sign up for free. That's connectively.us. Connectively.us.
Hello and welcome to Freelancing for Journalists. I'm Emma, and this series we're talking all about how to diversify your income, all those different ways that you can earn money as a freelance journalist. Yes, and today we are going to be talking about social media management, what it is and how to do it as a freelancer. And this will be, of course, with the help of two guests who know far more about this than we do. And we have one from the UK and another from the US. But before we introduce them, we're going to do, as usual, our win of the week. So, Emma, what's yours this week?
Okay, so mine is some work that unexpectedly came my way. So I was doing a news shift and I needed some comment from an organisation. So I went to their press office and said, you know, are you commenting on this story? And I got a really quick response back going, oh, I'm not sure, we'll look into it. But while I've got you, we're looking for someone to do some articles for our in-house magazine. Would you be interested? Yes, I would be interested. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. So yeah, they're getting back to me about that. But I just felt, I don't know if I was already kind of on their radar or they were thinking that this was something that I could do, because they do kind of know me. I contact them quite a lot. Or if it was just, oh, right, yeah, I'm currently thinking about this project that we need to source out because we haven't got time to do it ourselves. And here's a person getting in touch, and immediately I'm going to offer it to them. I don't know how it came about, but it did seem, I didn't expect to be walking away with some work from that request to the press office. So yeah, it was great. And it's just profile pieces that they want to do of members. So there's like, yeah, there's no conflict or anything. I was very pleased with that. So yeah. Lily, what's your win of the week?
Yeah, mine's something a little bit different. So I'm writing an article at the moment about doing a grateful mile every day. So I went out and started this yesterday, did my first grateful mile. I'm going to be doing this for a month. And I thought, might sound a little bit corny, but I thought, I'm grateful I can actually go out and do a grateful mile in the middle of the day. And I can do it anytime I want to do, really. And I just thought, you know, the first thing I want to focus on is how grateful I am that I am in a position where I have completely flexible work. I have security in my work and I enjoy what I do. So it was quite nice that this little exercise, which is actually for an article, kind of was able to kind of help me reflect on work, but also it'll be, you know, reflecting on general things in life as well. So it's just like quite a nice little start to the week.
That's interesting. I want to know, so in this grateful mile, do you have to think of something that you're grateful about?
Yeah,
is that the idea? And it's something different every time.
Yeah, or you can dig into it might be the same thing, so it might be like family, but it could be, you know, is it a particular family member, is it a particular moment that you've shared with them? Or, you know, it's something that you've done together recently. So, yeah, my initial problem was I was like, oh, I'm grateful for this and this and this and this and this and this. And I was like, no, I need to like hone in on one thing and just think about that. And therefore, each day I've got kind of something different to think about. So, yeah, that's the idea that you kind of, you can go back to things, but you kind of perhaps look at them in a different way. But you can read all about it soon, after I've done my month. It should be published in a little while.
So let's introduce our guests, who both have lots of experience in social media management alongside their work as freelance journalists.
Yeah, so we have with us Nicole Letts, a freelance journalist based in Atlanta. Nicole has been published in Yahoo Life, the BBC, Architectural Digest, Every Girl, and more, writing about food, travel, lifestyle, and interiors. She also does work in social media marketing and management.
And we also have with us Britt Jones, a freelance journalist and SEO writer. Britt has written for Metro UK, Lad Bible, and Tyler. She also provides social media management services, tailoring promotional and topical posts to boost audience awareness and engagement.
Thank you both for coming and speak to us about this topic today. I think this is something that Lily and I don't know much about, so we're really excited to start digging and kind of pick your brains about this one. But first, if we could get you to tell us a bit about yourselves, how you got into journalism and the different types of work that you do now as a freelance. Nicole, I'll come to you first. Can you tell us more about yourself?
Yeah, so I have a little bit of a backdoor entry into journalism. So I did not go to journalism school, but I majored in secondary education. So I taught middle school here in the States for almost a decade, have several degrees in education, everything but my doctorate, several certificates, things like that, and taught really great kids, and I just couldn't get excited about it. So when I was 30, I decided I wanted a change. And so I actually started working. I kind of put myself out there and said, hey, I can write. And a local fashion company hired me to do their social media. And this was, you know, 10 years ago when it was just like pulling images into PowerPoint and then putting them onto Facebook. Like, it wasn't anything super interesting at the time. But I would teach all day, and then I would go after school to work with this fashion company and help them write descriptions in their newsletters and things like that. That eventually led to me meeting some people in PR, which led to them, you know, me saying, hey, I'm interested in writing journalism or writing in the journalism space. And they ended up putting me in touch with editors. And so my last year teaching, I got an email inviting me to write for a hyperlocal publication here in Atlanta. And that same week got invited to come on full time with the fashion company to help them with their social media marketing, and I ended up quitting my teaching job for the next year. I mean, I didn't like back out in the middle of the year on the kids, but quit my teaching job and have been doing this for about the same amount of time.
Wow, that's a really interesting route into it, and it's great to hear when people have made like a successful career change and have gone from, you know, stable, secure job into freelancing and have chosen to do that. Britt, what's your journey then, and what kind of work do you do, and how did you get into it?
Well, I went through schooling for journalism. So I started off writing at college at a journalism and media degree, and then I went on to university to do media and journalism again. But in between those, I'd take on jobs with local publications, local newspapers. And then when I left, I was a little bit stagnant. I didn't use my degree at all until I had children during COVID, about 3 weeks before COVID. And I thought, oh, I'm not going back to a full-time job with an employer. So I started putting the feelers out. I started pitching to like Metro, Lad Bible, and any newspapers I knew, and worked my way in there. And then it was kind of a matter of just thinking, well, this isn't enough work at the moment. I need something else. So by chance, I saw that someone was looking for a social media writer. So I took a chance and I said, I'll go and apply what could happen. And then I got it about a week later. So I've been doing that alongside journalism, and also I took on being the digital editor for three magazines in January this year. So I've been collecting all different types of work that kind of interest me, but I do quite a lot of social media management at the moment.
Fantastic. I mean, it sounds quite busy at times, so you've got plenty on. Britt, can you talk me through what that social media management entails? So as a journalist, if I kind of pitch an idea or I'm given a brief by an editor and it says, I want this many words on this topic, speak to these people, kind of off you go. When you're doing the social media side of things, what kind of information do you get and what expectations are there on what you'll provide?
So initially I tend to draft up like an onboarding form and a brief. So the client will come to me and they'll talk about who their competitors are, who they admire in the industry, like whose posts they would like to kind of be the same. And then they talk about kind of what's relevant to their audience. So I do promotional posts, which is things that they want to advertise, like the services, events, and so on. But then also I'll do industry relevant news, which kind of brings in kind of a thought leadership type of vibe through like LinkedIn and such. And then on top of that, they'll also maybe ask for blog posts, or they'll ask for a campaign, or for me to have their logins and engage with their audience as well and answer things on their inbox. So I have quite a lot of whole monthly management and kind of overtake the whole social media, and I hope I get it right. They do tell me if I get it wrong quite quickly, but it doesn't happen very often, thankfully.
Nicole, what does it look like for you? Because you mentioned you started off with this fashion company, but I understand you've gone on to kind of work with other clients now. So again, how does that sort of process work, and what kind of posts are you doing?
So I think for me, I really focus on teeny tiny, like micro small businesses. I've kind of always positioned myself as someone that can help a small business take something off of their plate. If they're looking to outsource something, social media is a good place to start. It's not quite as scary. So many people will say like, hey, I'm just very unfamiliar with social media. I don't know what I'm doing. And that's when I can come in and help. So I tend to have clients that are a little bit all over the board. For example, I do, there's a big art show here in the Atlanta area, and it's technically a school fundraiser, but they have 350 juried artists from all over the country, and the school makes well over $1 million for their, you know, their teachers and their scholarships and things like that, and it's pretty famous artists in this area. And so for them, that is a, like, we have like a 6 month on, 6 month off relationship, where we really ramp up during that time. And then we kind of slow it down in between the two seasons of the art show. But similarly, I will look at our, like how we've done year over year. So I've actually worked with them for 7 years. So I'm going into my eighth season with them. And, we really had a strong emphasis of making a strong voice for them, making it not look like a school fundraiser. So I don't think now the way that we've positioned their social media, that it looks like it's a school fundraiser. I mean, that's kind of like the back burner. That's the bonus. That's the, you know, feel good thing. It's not, it looks more like a really well orchestrated week long pop-up art show event. So I really focus on voice, the audience, who is your audience, who, what is your voice, how do we want the content to look and feel, who are we trying to attract, and I think that that's a big deal. So I'm about to actually onboard an antique store here, and they kind of have very quirky items, but they also have very fun things that interior designers and decorators would be excited about. And so they're asking me to come in and kind of look at it through that perspective. And, you know, I think a similar process as far as let's get you onboarded. Let's look at like what you want to emulate. But from there, because I work with such small businesses, I can really tailor what I'm doing specifically to their needs, which is kind of nice.
Yeah, it sounds like you have the opportunity to be quite creative, I suppose, which kind of, you know, fits with what we'd all like to be, I think, in terms of coming up with ideas and, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think we end up leading them versus the other way around. You know, you had mentioned that it's, you know, an editor comes to you with all of the information and we kind of have to do the other direction. Britt and I have to be like, here's what we need from you. And this is what we need you to provide. And once you give us the skeleton, we can give you everything else. So it's almost like a very like circular thing. Like you give us this, once they give it to us, we can then really get the ball rolling and make it, you know, make the content as effective in words as it is in imagery.
I'm still trying to get over the fact that school raises £1 million. My school,
I know,
would be delighted if it raised £1,000. It can't even manage to do that in a year. So £1 million is just, that's just phenomenal. Well,
and it's a huge responsibility. And so that's one of the things that I always feel like, hey, are we on target like we were last year? You know, whatever. They're like, we had our biggest year ever. You're like, great. Can't wait to try and do that again.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? You set yourself a really high bar there.
Yes.
And one thing I'm interested about is, obviously, you know, you've both got bank clients now, but how you get that work. So, Britt, how do clients come to you? Or are you, like, pitching to businesses? How does that work?
So when I started off, I began being subcontracted through a social media agency. So they would cold email, and if they got people coming through, then I would be assigned to those clients. But the way that I also do SEO writing is I'd look at random landing pages on websites and say, that looks a bit bleak. So I pitched them. So I thought, well, why not do that to social media companies as well? So I kind of go through LinkedIn. I look at the industries I'm most familiar with, so tech, recruitment, and teaching as well, education, I like that as well. And then I'll just send them a quick message like, I've got my portfolio here, there's no strings attached, I just thought that we could do more with what you're giving your audience at the moment. And then if they've got any campaigns running at the moment on the website or events, I could say, well, these are some ideas that I had that we could do. This is what I did with a previous client, and this is how I kind of achieved it for them. And generally they say yes, because social media is quite hard for a lot of companies to dedicate that much time to. And it's so many resources and so much money to pull into an in-house person. So overall, it's cheaper and it's more effective just to get someone from the outside to take it off the plate and deal with it.
And also, I suppose you might be able to see things that they aren't as coming kind of from the outside. But it sounds like you need to be quite clever in how you market yourself and how you brand yourself and putting yourself forward. So how would you sort of approach that? Do you have a website that kind of showcases what you can do? How do you sort of show people your skills?
I used to have a website, but I actually have a Linktree link in all of my social media accounts, just so I can collate everything. So they can see the news that I've done, they can see the clients that I work with, and any project that comes up, just so they can get like an overall feel of what I do. And then I'll also send them to websites that I've redone, companies that I have done social media for, just so they can have a scroll on the feed and kind of see if that's kind of interesting to them. And yeah, you really do have to market yourself. I'm not a marketer by any means. I'm not great with sales pitches or anything like that. But I found that once I understood the trigger points and the pain points of companies, that really leaning into those cost effectiveness, take the stress away, I can do this, don't worry, then they just go, sure, even if it's a trial. And then it kind of extends further as they see what it brings to them.
It sounds like there's quite a lot of crossover with like content writing, copywriting as well. Nicole, you're sort of nodding away. So is it not just, you know, putting up an Instagram post, but do you do other work, Nicole, sort of, you know, for websites and, I don't know, brochures, or, you know, how sort of diverse is the type of stuff that you're doing?
So because I work with such small businesses, one of the things that I tell them is like, hey, if you need other work, that is something else I can do. And that's really kind of how I position myself. Like, of course, I know social media and I try as best I can to stay up to date with the, you know, the newest things that they're launching and things like that. But to me, at the core, I'm a writer. And so I can take these ideas and consolidate them or broaden them into whatever, you know, deliverable you need. And so 9 times out of 10, people really want Instagram content from me. I don't know if that's the same for Britt, but that's basically, it's like it starts with Instagram and it kind of goes out from there. And I think that's the one that's the most tangible for people. So that kind of makes the most sense. It's the one that's the most familiar. But then I'll say like, hey, like we have this Instagram series that we could very easily turn into a newsletter or a blog if you're interested in that. Sometimes they're like, yeah, tell me how to do that. Let's do that. Sometimes they're like, no, like we don't want to go there yet. But yeah, I really do think, to me at the core, you know, one of the things I probably shoot myself in the foot a little bit, but one of the things I try to say is, you know, my goal is to get a really clear voice, really consistent imagery, a really consistent voice, a consistent posting schedule to get you present. And then that's really what I'm going to do. As far as like, if you want to grow by 10,000 followers overnight, like not really my, I'm not going to be able to make that happen, at least if, from a guaranteed perspective. So, you know, going back to that art show, for example, I mean, that art show now has 13,000 followers on Instagram, which is pretty big for a school fundraiser that lasts 1 week out of the year. And we started at 500 7 years ago. And so that's a really slow growth, but, you know, it's a really niche growth. So I think it shows that, you know, what can be done with consistency over time. So that's one of the things that I really focus on is, you know, making sure that people understand that at the end of the day, I'm a writer and that's my best skill set, but I can apply that in these other areas for you. And, you know, let me show you what I can do.
Yeah. Yeah. You mentioned there about scheduling of posts, which takes me nicely to my next question, which was going to be about how you keep track and plan for it all. And if you've got multiple clients, I know just doing the social media for my own stuff, plus freelancing for journalists, plus another organization that I do some voluntary stuff for, that it can get a bit sort of head spinny. So Britt, have you got any kind of tools or tricks to help you keep track and be organized and know when, you know, scheduling posts and everything?
So I am famously disorganized. So I have to do so much to keep myself on top of it. So when I need to schedule multiple clients, I have about 5 different calendars on 5 different like areas. So I've got a physical calendar that I write things down for and I make sure that I know what's happening. That exact same information is then on an Excel spreadsheet. It's also on the notes on my phone and reminders that pop up on my phone as well on the same day. And then also when you use like your content management tools and stuff, that's a dream. It's an absolute time saver to be able to bulk write and schedule well in advance and get that out of the way, and then you can move on to the next client. If I had to write individual posts and just put them up as and when they needed to be going, I don't think I'd have been able to keep as organized. So making sure that you've got all the calendars, you've got it all written down and kind of lined up what your next to-do list is. And then also a scheduler. It's just, yeah, you definitely need a scheduler for that.
And did you sort of need any training in how to use different content management systems? Did you just sort of figure it out? Does it depend on what the client already has or uses? How does that work?
So I've worked with clients that I've previously used, say like Hootsuite or Loomly, and they have their own, and they just give you the logins and just say, use this. And so I will, as long as it kind of gives me all the features that I need. Sometimes it won't provide the features that I want or the features that they need as they expand. So some people really want like a multi-collaboration tool that allows you to do e-signs and newsletters and editing tools as well. So then together we'll look for a different software that we neither of us have known about, and then I'll have to kind of learn as I use the features and read up about it. So I think with social media management and the tools available to you, it's almost like continuous learning. You're constantly picking up new tools and new systems, researching for better ways and more efficient ways to do things. So yeah, I would definitely set them. There's no set training, though some do have demos that you have to watch beforehand. But yeah, it's definitely kind of using your own initiative, getting familiar with it before you start bashing out loads of posts, and making sure that you're choosing something that has everything that you need.
And with social media being so kind of fast moving, you know, it always seems like they're bringing in a new feature or the algorithm's changing. Nicole, how do you kind of keep on top of all that and know like the best way to use the particular tool that you're using?
That is an ever evolving question, just as sure as the algorithm and all of those tools are ever evolving. I feel like why am I going to stay on top of it is also ever evolving. I rely a lot on, Hootsuite, and there are some other social media kind of like expert websites that really provide some of the, you know, hey, this is coming sort of information, be on the lookout for this, which is really helpful. You know, that I think is something that is next to impossible to stay on top of. But I do know that for me, I have to stay on top of it better than my clients. So my job is to stay many steps ahead of them as best as I can and make sure that they understand some of these changes and things like that. You know, at the core, sometimes you have to really start at the beginning and people are like, well, what's a post? And I'll tell them like, this is a post. Well, like, but what's a blog post? Okay, well, this is a blog post. Well, what is a story and how is that different from a this? And so I feel like a lot of what I do is really like dumbing it way, way, way down. And I mean that in the nicest way possible, but, you know, taking it very, very small. And so then they're asking about things like the algorithm. I'm like, you guys don't need to worry about that because we're still working on like the definition of a post. But for me, I have to worry about that. So I have to think about, you know, little tricks here and there that I can do to help the client, whether it's through hashtags, location tags, you know, staying on top of like how many hashtags are desirable now. I mean, you know, 5 years ago, it was like, you can use up to 30, so you should use 30. And now it's like fewer than 8, maybe closer to 3 or 5. I mean, you know, some of these things have changed and that's where I feel like my job is. And so I just keep my ear to the ground by reading like we would with any other research that we're doing. But also, you know, social media itself is a really valuable place. You know, TikTok and Instagram will tell you like the tricks of TikTok and Instagram. And, you know, whereas my clients don't need to be on social media, TikTok, I do. I need to be seeing, you know, length of videos and tricks for looping and just things like that. So there are some expert websites that I tend to use. And of course, when there's a big release from, you know, Meta about what is coming out next, I'll pay attention to that. But a lot of it is just staying ahead of the curve, or at least staying with the curve, because so many times my clients are really behind the curve. So my job is to like ride the wave for them.
Yeah. And does that mean as part of your role, are you giving feedback then on how much engagement they've had and kind of what posts are doing well or not well? Like, to what level are you, you know, are they looking at that themselves, or is that part of your job as well? to say, this strategy really works. Look, here are the figures. Let's do this, more of this next time.
I mean, I think I try to do that for them because so many times I don't think that they have time. And a lot of times I don't think they understand it. So because I'm working with like one-on-one with small businesses more so than one-on-one with bigger corporations, I think that, you know, I'll be like, hey, is your account set to a business account so that you can see the analytics? And they're like, no. And then if I change that for them, they're like, well, what does all of this mean? And it gets kind of muddy and it gets confusing for them again. So for me, I will look and see, okay, like what's happening in our, you know, in our analytics, what can we look at? What can we see? You know, that art show, it was just like less than a month ago. So it's still like on my mind, but we really had some huge, I don't want to say viral, but viral for a school fundraiser, videos that did really well. And so we spent the week looking at those reels and being like, okay, like what did we do? We used splashy music. We used trending music. We used, quick moving video, like let's emulate that and do that again. And we saw really high numbers in reels because we were paying attention in that moment. But yeah, I tend to be the one that's looking at the analytics, and that helps me form content for them, versus me like pulling them into the weeds. A lot of times my clients are like, you do it and you pay attention and like report to us when there's something positive happening or when something seems off, but we don't need to be in the muck with, you know, the back end. They barely know what that means.
Yeah. No, that makes complete sense to me. And I'm sitting here like one of your clients, I think, thinking, I don't know what any of this stuff means. So I completely get where you're coming from there. I guess the other thing I wanted to pick up on there is you were talking about kind of video content, and Britt, maybe if we could come to you, but in terms of the amount of stuff that you're generating and then what the client is generating, so would you expect them to be taking video and photo and giving that to you to use, or are you creating multimedia content from scratch?
So I do both. I'd find it really helpful if they have events and they do take as many photos as possible and as many clips and reels as possible, because then maybe I could collate them together, do a quick edit and make just like a nice trailer, or kind of add a little bit of zest to their images. But a lot of the time I might get one video which is 20 minutes long, and I sit there and think, there's no scheduler on earth that's going to allow me to post that. The file's too big. And no one's going to watch it for 20 minutes. So then I have to think, okay, well, and have like quite a good conversation about how we can make this more appropriate to the audience. Because, of course, in the age of TikTok and in the age of being like visual beings, everyone is very, maybe a 10-second attention span, and then they're gone. No one wants to see more than that. So if they can provide me with the content and then I change it to kind of how the audience is as they constantly evolve in their attention and trends, then that's fine. If they don't give me anything, I will generate it. But I think if you really want a consistent and kind of like omni-channel brand voice that's just across the board, everything looks the same, sounds the same, then when clients hand you all of this media, then it's a lot easier to kind of do the job. But when you're doing it from scratch, you have to really think whether or not this lines up, whether it looks right, whether or not it's kind of valued. So I would prefer if they did give me it, but sometimes they don't have the tools for it.
Yeah, and that's sort of more work on your part as well if you're having to generate that content, which leads me very nicely to the question that everybody is going to be wanting to know is, how do you charge for your time for this? Is it because, as you know, as journalists, we can either charge by the day or by the word. Kind of what sort of contracts are you drawing up, and what are you what's taken into account when it comes to the fee that you charge? I'm going to ask both of you this question because you might have very different answers because you're working with different clients. But Britt, I'll come to you first.
So, the charging's quite difficult. So with a lot of clients, I will charge an hourly rate because I can look at a monthly schedule, see you're doing 4 posts to LinkedIn a week. It's probably only going to take 3 hours in bulk to write that. So I'd charge them for 3 hours. Whereas some people might be running a campaign, so I'd charge them for a project basis, which is essentially a retainer, or it's a day rate, depending how long it will take me to get there. But yeah, I would say generally it's an hourly rate because it can change and it can fluctuate with how much time I'm spending on them.
Yeah, and so would you kind of keep an eye on that if you were working someone in the long term, but things were actually taking longer than you sort of expected, and feed that back to them?
So I would use something like Toggle Track, which keeps track of all the hours that you're using throughout the week or the month. And then as it changes, as they inevitably add more things on that they're looking into, your rates and your kind of billing will change with that.
Yeah, yeah. And Nicole, is that the same for you? How, because you're working with local businesses, and actually it sounds like it's not like they've got experience of hiring someone to do this work before necessarily. So how do you sort out what you're going to charge?
Well, first of all, Britt, I just wrote down Toggle Track as something that I need to go and look into. But for me, I actually work more on a retainer basis, on a month-to-month retainer basis. And when I onboard a client, I usually ask them to commit to 3 months on the front end, because to me, that's enough time for me to get to know the client. And for us to really start to see progress, I would like for them to really stick it out for 6 months to a year. But that's a scary commitment when you're a small business and when you're throwing, not huge numbers at them, because I try to be aware that they're small businesses. But again, I also have to be aware that anything I'm doing for social media is taking away from journalism and time I could be pitching, time I could be traveling, time I could be working on stories there. So I really stick to a retainer method. For me, it helps me I kind of trick my own mind into being like, okay, like you are going to be working for this amount for this month, and that feels better than, your very low digital rates that you're getting for writing for websites. So I do just make sure whatever I am charging is going to equate or even outnumber what the time that I would be taking away from writing. That's kind of how I go about it. And I do mine based on the post per month. So if a client wants, they were like, well, we want to post every day. And then I show them what that costs. So like, we want to post 3 times a week. So I kind of show them, various strategies that they could be using effectively. Because so many of my clients, I feel like, are different from Brits in that they are really like starting at like, we don't understand social media. We post, but we don't know what we're doing. And so for them, I think it's scary for me to throw out super big numbers for them. So I try to meet them where they're at. And I usually present them with 3 packages of 3 different types of retainers that include 3 different types of social media, generally the amount of posts per week. And then let them kind of see what they can commit to. But I do ask, like I said, for a 3-month commitment if possible.
Yeah, that makes sense. Like you say, with social media, it takes time for it to kind of get off the ground and for you to see what's working, what's gaining traction. So that would make sense. You're not going to find anything out in a couple of weeks, I guess. Loads of useful advice there, and obviously you're both juggling this alongside writing and journalism work as well. So just kind of wanted to lead on to a final question, which is kind of what your advice would be for someone who perhaps is doing freelance journalism but is also interested in branching out into social media management. Like, where do they start? Britt, what would your advice be?
With starting, I'd probably say LinkedIn. I'd say if you because you can go to job boards, you can go to a lot of different freelancing job boards, but what they'll probably point you towards is something like Fiverr or something that's just very underpaid and very undervalued for the work you're providing. So I got all of, well, most of my clients at the start from LinkedIn job boards, and they always wanted freelancers to come on board. I'd also say, just make sure that you're aware and you have the conversation with them, how much they want from you, how much work they want from you, so you're able to know exactly how much you can commit to. It takes a long time to kind of figure out how long it takes you to do certain posts. An Instagram post will take you longer than a tweet, and so you need to kind of work out what channels they want, how you can fit that in across your other work, how much you think that you should be charging. My advice is definitely like probably 10% of a day rate for like an hour. So just kind of make sure you know how much hours you're having in throughout the day, so you can, you know, get paid well for the work that you're doing. It's not scary to kind of diversify your income. If anything, it's really securing and really, really good to know that you have other streams of revenue coming in that is consistent, that is trusted, and you know, it's not hard to start out either.
Yeah, that's really helpful. And Nicole, what would your advice be? Because again, some people might think, I haven't got a clue what to charge, and you know, should I charge more than I would, you know, would be my rate for a piece of journalism? Like, how do they know where to start with that?
Yeah, I think one of the things that Britt just said was that it's not scary to diversify your income. It provides a lot of security. And so for me, what I really do is think about, you know, if a digital publication that I write for regularly is saying, you know, they're going to give me, let's just say, $250 for a story. And I think about that story and I say, okay, how long does that story take me? And then I break that down, and that's my hourly rate. And then what Britt was saying about how she charges is to take that hourly rate and think about how long that might take you to do social media. If you are good at social media, in the sense that like your own personal social media is really strong, then you can probably say like, that's not going to take me very long. But then the trick is making sure that you're not undervaluing yourself as well. So, you know, like it doesn't take me very long because I've been doing it for 15 years at this point. So just kind of finding that balance. The other thing that I do, this is probably bad, but I'm like, what number is going to make me happy to do this work, where I am not going to be resentful of this work? And that sometimes it's a difference of like sounding like $50 in your head. You're like, okay, so I could charge $450, and then I'm like, but really $500 makes me happier. And that's what I would charge. And to me, you do run the risk of them saying no, but to me, that's okay, because that's that time I can focus on journalism instead. And so for me, when I approach clients, when I first got started, it really came to like businesses that I loved that I knew had terrible social media. And I was like, I could make this so much better for you if you would, you know, let me play with it. And so I would sit down with them and kind of tell them about what I could do, and go from there. And so a lot of my clients came from word of mouth. And then them telling their friends like, oh man, like Nicole, it's like changed the game. And that has made things so much easier for us. But that's kind of how I decide how I'm going to charge. It's not foolproof, but it is a huge benefit of working for yourself, is you get to really make your own rate. And because I work with tiny, tiny businesses, I will tell them like, hey, if this is really outside of your budget, like tell me and let's see what I can do to help you get to a budget that you're more comfortable with. And hopefully we can come to an agreement. If it's someone who's really undervaluing me, I do the same thing. It gives you a lot of autonomy and a lot of control over how you're spending your time. But also, because you're working on a monthly retainer or a contract, in some cases, you're guaranteeing yourself some income. And like, as a freelancer, like, what's not to love about that?
I feel like I want to apply what amount would make me happy to every single bit of work I do now. But I feel like that's just like the best. I'm going to sit here and think, now, would I be happy to do this article or news ship for this rate? And just, yeah, just decide. I love it. It's brilliant. Okay. We've had so much practical advice from both of you. It's been great. Before we sign off, we want to get your recommendation of a piece of work by a freelance journalist. Nicole, what are you going to suggest to us today?
So I have two really dear friends that actually we talk regularly. We share each other's stuff regularly. And so my friend Amy Beth Wright, she writes a lot for Wine Enthusiasts. So she's kind of positioned herself as a wine expert, and she just did an article about the best places to find wine in Texas. And I think that's just really cool. You know, of course, like you hear about California wine, Italian, France, etc. I really hope this can be not a social media topic or like anything about like the business when it comes down to writing. But she just did a cool article about that. And then my friend Rebecca Derlein, did a really fun post for BBC, or a really fun article for BBC. It is about the Sandwich King of Chicago, Jeff Morrow, who is a guy on Food Network. If you saw his face, you would definitely recognize him. And he is talking about the best places to get sandwiches in Chicago. And as a food and travel writer, I just thought that was really fun. And also, I figured we should bring in a BBC story since I'm chatting with you ladies today. But again, if it needed to be something super on topic, I'm at a loss. But
no, sandwiches and wine is right in our wheelhouse.
Right?
thank you very much for that. That's perfect. We'll put the links to all these in our show notes as well. Brit, what's your recommendation for us?
Mine is Emma Rosen. She basically kickstarted my whole ideology about work, and she wrote a book called The Radical Sabbatical, which is she ditched her 9-to-5 government job and she did 25 jobs before she turned 25, just to find out what she wanted to do. And that kind of culminated in the portfolio career, having lots of different jobs which kind of make up one whole kind of career. But it includes everything that you love about work and kind of gets rid of the stuff that might be a little bit boring to someone that's working a 9-to-5. But yeah, I absolutely loved that book. I was like, I need to do this. And so I did. So it was great.
Yes, that's what we like to hear here. I mean, I'm always counting the number of jobs I have. And my youngest son, who's 8, is like, Mummy, you have 5 jobs and I can list them all. And I was like, okay, is it 5 this week? Yeah, that's good to know. So I think, yes, it's all part of the freelance portfolio, and that's what we love about it. Well, thank you so much. I've written so many notes down for like links to various apps as well as those recommendations. So I will put them all in the show notes.
Fantastic. So that's it for this episode. If you want bonus podcast episodes, why don't you become a premium newsletter subscriber, where you can get access to an extra weekly newsletter. All of our other resources can be found on freelancingforjournalists.com. And big thanks as ever to our producer, Maddie Drury.
Until next time, goodbye.
Bye.